Hi, my name is Emmy from the Vegan for Life podcast, which you can find at vegan-for-life.blogspot.com, and you're listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Vegetarian.
Vegan.
Yeah,
let's get it right.
You used the word animals, but I suppose what you should have said is non-human animals. If you want to make the world.
Hello and welcome to episode 52 of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals, your favourite Invercargill, New Zealand-based animal rights show. This episode, the New Zealand diet, where you come to lose weight and be as thin as possible. I'd like to share some clips from the popular show King of the Hill. I recorded them all off television each night for several years to get every episode. Yep, sure did. Although my method of recording off my television might be getting cracked down on by a recent New Zealand file-sharing law. So let's get this show on the road before Los Federales roll up. Come up with your hands up, slave. Yeep. Also encoded in this AAC file, a comparison between my part of the world and another part of the world. Pretty exciting, huh? With King of the Hill presenting a fictional town, Arlen, I thought it would be fun to have an actual Texan on, Barbara de Grand, who will interrogate about the actual Texas. Is their tea really made out of black goop, imported fresh from the latest war zone? We'll find out soon. It's important to learn about other countries, otherwise you might get a bit confused. Take George Carlin, for example.
Then I just sort of give up, you know, and pull out and try for the best thing, whatever I can find. I just want to go home, you know? Just trying to get home. And I get behind the worst thing of all, a Volvo station wagon, diesel. Here's a safety freak who's going to save his life and give me cancer. He has 2.6 children strapped into the point of suffocation, a damp canoe on the roof, and a New Zealand license plate. With a little sticker that says, Save Our Volcano. Volvo, the intelligent car for ignorant people. And I begin to realize that I'm never going to get home.
Well, when you get there, George, maybe you'll realize you were thinking of the wrong place. I think he meant another American state's license plate. Not New Zealand, but New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York. A Volvo, registered in New Zealand, or at least having New Zealand license plates. Right-hand drive, the car would be, as in the steering wheel and the driver on the right side of the car, the front passenger sits on the left, and this would be in America? And we drive like maniacs here in New Zealand, anyway. We need an envoy from the American people, and who better than a pretty face with nothing going on inside?
And she says amazing things like, I know about Russia because I can see it from my backyard. You have supervision, number one. And I can see San Quentin from my backyard, but that doesn't qualify me on prison reform. What the f***? It's incredible, too. She said polar bears are not endangered, they're just unlucky. Oh, really? And who knew Katie Couric was the cutting edge of journalism with ambush questions like, what do you read? Well, yeah. That's a trick question. Not if you read, no.
Sadly, that woman, a future president of America, no doubt, she was busy, so they sent a bunch of models over. Yes, I'm referring to America's Next Top Model, which had a few episodes recorded here a long, long time ago, 2010. More recently, there were episodes of The Biggest Loser recorded in nearby Queenstown. Mountains, lakes, snow, cold water. For some reason, people think it's amazing. I don't know how I feel about it. It's cool if we're seen internationally as a place to host reality television shows, I think. A place for models to be judged based on how little body fat they have, and other people who want to lose weight. I don't know where that reputation came from. A quick 20-hour flight to a Pacific Island nation will sort them out. Those socialists will help them lose weight, based on the native diet of gruel and kiwi droppings. Please, sir, may I have more? 9, mate. We're all equal in New Zealand, comrade, and you've just finished your government-allocated portion of rolled oat/oatmeal for the next week. It was even odd how New Zealand was introduced. We have no idea what a Z is. We do have a Z at the end of our alphabet, though.
Okay.
You know, I've been up all night. I'm a little bit exhausted.
You are?
Yeah. I'm kind of sleepy, too, to be honest with you.
Whitney, you tired?
I'm so tired.
You know, it's crazy. Like, I've been such an insomniac, and I have not slept in I don't know how long. I feel like we should just take a power nap or something.
It's a great idea. Marvelous idea.
Let's catch some Z's. Angel, I can't get comfortable.
I can help you catch some Z's.
Who are you?
Sure as hell isn't a New Zealander. I don't know what the heck that accent was meant to be. Sounds like a drunk Sylvester Stallone trying to do an Australian accent.
I'm a shepherd. One of the best ways to catch Z's is to count sheep.
That's a great idea. One sheep, two sheep.
Hey, I think it's working. I'm catching a Z. I got a Z too.
I'm catching Z's too.
You're catching Z's?
All right, let's go right above you.
To catch more Z's, you're going to New Zealand! New Zealand! So, after this judging, only 6 of you will be packing to go to New Zealand. And one of you, unfortunately, will be staying in the US of A. And going home.
Aw, man, who wouldn't want to go on a 20-hour plus flight to the other side of the world, some strange, backwards little island nation, when they could stay here, in New York, with a population double the size of that entire crappy little country? And they just had to use our crappy national anthem. It's all religious and everything, begging for everyone else to leave us alone. God Pacific triple star, from the shafts of strife and war, make her praises heard afar, God defend our free land. What's an atheist to do? And here I am telling my American friends we're not run by a bunch of right-wing religious wackos, and there we go. While other countries proudly boast of all their rockets redly glaring, we're begging Jesus to keep all the bad guys away, that we're afraid of everyone else. I know what song I would have picked. If America can be represented by a French statue, we can pick an atheist-approved, auto-tuned masterpiece. I don't know about old school Chevys. Don't you guys normally push those old hunks of junk down into the levee? Thus the origin of the term Katrina car? New Zealand's national car would have to be a late 90s Toyota, a pre-loved, shall we say, Japanese import. There's a great bit in the episode where the model's taxis, those awful Ford Fairmonts, Australian and New Zealand listeners, you know what I'm talking about, hideous things. They're stuck behind an R34 Skyline. Now that's a car we can proudly call a Kiwi classic. Americans probably only know them from The Fast and the Furious, but they're common here in New Zealand. The Nissan Skyline. There's one on every street, with the early 20s guy pretending to drift around every corner.
Zealand was like right above Canada or something like that. I really had no idea.
How pretty is that?
Looks like Arkansas.
I can skip the first insult, not knowing where this New Zealand is, but looks like Arkansas? Oh, come on! How stupid is that? We all know it's pronounced Arkansas. Comparing New Zealand, is it an insult or a compliment to be compared to Arkansas? I only know about them through wacky races, the Arkansas Chuggabug.
I've always kind of been underneath someone's wing, like my mom or my dad, and then I got married so young, and just to have all these experiences that I've never had before, and so I feel like a new woman, spreading my wings, and I love it.
I'm never leaving New Zealand, ever.
So we walk up to this beautiful grassy volcano, and there are these tribal men there with these little butt flaps. Sitting there looking at them like, what is going on? I've never experienced another culture like this. At first, it scared the crap out of me.
Ooh, girls, welcome to Auckland, New Zealand. And I have someone here to explain a little bit what you've just seen, which was a Maori performance. Mr. Colin Matura Jeffries.
He's also a judge for New Zealand's Next Top Model.
Hi, ladies. The volcano that we're on is called Mount Eden. It's really sacred to the Maori people. The Maori performance you saw is the Haka Pōwhiri. What they're doing is they're representing who they are, their ancestry, and the power of their people.
And now that you girls have been traditionally welcomed here, Tara didn't bring you here only because of its beautiful people and the beautiful landscape. Air New Zealand has launched 8 years ago. Yeah.
The seats are 2.5 centimetres longer, and there's cup holders to make that 20-hour flight just fly by. This episode brought to you by Air New Zealand. We get it, guys. Thanks for the plane load of clueless models. Where's an Oceanic Flight 815 when you need it? Sadly, the model's plane wasn't snapped in half by a magnetic pulse because some guy called Dears didn't put numbers into an old Apple II.
We in New Zealand, y'all! Yeah!
We in New Zealand, y'all? Seriously, I'm trying to think of a cliched New Zealand saying we might use in another country. Something like, "Chura, mate, we're in America, bro."
Super late!
Hi, ladies. How are ya?
Good.
This is Sarah Tetro. She owns 62 Model Management, the most successful modelling agency in New Zealand.
So that means it's world famous too, right?
And guess what, ladies? Sarah Tetro is the host of New Zealand's Next Top Model.
Welcome to New Zealand.
Thank you.
So, ladies, we've had some feedback from the designers that you met with today. Krista, Alasia, and Raina. You were all late. I cannot abide lateness because time is money. So, all three of you are disqualified. Krista, last week, you had the best photograph, so you will win a garment from every designer that you saw today. Alasia, 45 minutes late. That is simply inexcusable. So, all three of you, I'd like you to leave the room now, please.
45 minutes is just completely outrageous, you know? But I'm not gonna stress myself about it because the last thing I need to do is be stressed.
Well, three of you left.
Always fun to showcase some more New Zealand accents. We're pretty exciting, you know?
We're here, New Zealand!
I wake up and you can see the Pacific Ocean right there. Like, you can almost, like, taste it.
Oh my gosh, this rainbow's incredible. This kind of thing does not ever happen in real life.
It's so big! I wanna touch it. This competition is just like opening my eyes like to the world, you know? I always knew the world was out there, but like I never thought I would experience that, you know? And then like I'm here now.
Ooh, New Zealand!
Thank you!
Thank you, yes!
Meh, you're welcome. We're not that great. We're just an underpopulated, nuclear-free country that every other nation likes, where everyone has healthcare, where there are no Republicans. We consider the other 50% of the population, you know, women, equally able to run the country. We've had both, quote, left-wing and, quote, right-wing female leaders. We don't give our Prime Minister, Army Barack Obama, a peace prize right before he starts the nation's latest war for oil.
Oh my gosh, like this house isn't even on cribs.
Oh my gosh.
Look at Nicole's picture.
Oh wow, that's my bed.
So to go from subsidized housing to like tallest building in New Zealand, this is crazy.
Yes, an apartment on a New Zealand skyscraper isn't on an MTV program about American rappers' mansions. Go figure. Did the model actually think that every impressive-looking house in the world would eventually be shown on cribs? And the reason for the models being in New Zealand in the first place? Why, to pose at a farm, with sheep, apparently, because America doesn't have any grass or a large sheep to be photographed beside.
That's it!
Yay! Hey, boo.
I know I'm about to kill it, and I know I'm about to do my thing, so I'm not even worried about it.
Can I sit on it?
No!
Not exactly. It's a sheep, not a rock.
You're thinking about it too much.
Ah, now 16 minutes through the episode, I can finally get some animal rights spin into it. Can I sit on it? She just said, I'm about to kill it, which I'm told doesn't mean she wants to literally kill the it. She doesn't want to kill the sheep, but she is instead offering an exuberant expression of self-confidence. Huh, go figure. I had to ask our friend Elizabeth Collins, www.nzveganpodcast.blogspot.com, for a translation. Elizabeth understands and speaks fluent English, Spanish, and American. And it would be disrespectful to sit on a sheep, right? But it's perfectly okay to literally throw them on their backs, on a wooden floored shed, cut his or her wall off, throw them out for the next sheep, to put large plastic tags through the ears identifying them as our property. It's okay for us to kill their young and sell their frozen corpses around the world as New Zealand lamb. Just don't sit on it.
Oh, Miss Pretty, you're also that prettiest girl on the block.
Yes, ma'am.
She said, yes, ma'am, I am. But it's not enough. Look how stunning you are. Just absolutely beautiful. But we have to connect our brains with our body, and we need focus in a photo. You must focus, okay? Okay.
Their bodies looked awfully scrawny. There's not a lot there. And as for their brains...
Auckland!
I thought New Zealand was like right above Canada or something like that. I really had no idea.
Okay, enough of me insulting models. I'm just jealous I didn't get picked in the pageant. Hey mate, I want world peace? Now, New Zealanders are not that smart either. See, here's the thing. Yes, it is 4 o'clock. I have to be told that all the time. We kind of have a large amount of greenhouse gas emissions, thanks to all the burping farm animals. So, how do we solve that? Well, the obvious solution is to introduce a creepy little beetle who likes to collect solid waste and traps it underground to eat later from a country that would be proud of such monsters.
Australian dung beetles may help us get out of the proverbial. The insects can eat a cow pat in 48 hours, increasing farm productivity, improving the quality of streams and rivers. Hamish Clark reports.
They are hungry, have a nose for dung, and are set to clean up our paddocks.
It's called Taurus because the male has a big set of horns on the top.
These humble Aussie dung beetles are still in quarantine. Soon they'll be released to spend their lives eating cowpats.
Like a shark going up an odour trail, these dung beetles catch an odour trail and go straight up to a fresh dung source.
Oh, crikey, look.
The adults feed on the dung, roll it up into balls and bury it, spreading it underground while aerating the soil at the same time. Eggs are laid inside the dung balls up to 100 a month as they chomp through millions of cowpats.
You can expect a cowpat to be removed from the soils, from the pasture surface within 24 to 48 hours once dung beetles are worked. And with a reduction in nitrogen and phosphorus fertilisers to be used on pasture.
In other words, farmers won't need to spend as much on fertiliser with the beetles taking the goodness of the dung below the surface.
I haven't heard much about it, but it would be a big advantage. So long as there's no other side effects, I don't know any disadvantages.
Another advantage is cows don't like to eat grass around where their dung lands. Its quick disposal will clean up the paddocks and reduce pollution running off into the waterways.
15,000 of the Aussie beetles will be released to munch their way through kiwi dung like this in Welsford near Auckland and Lower Southland at the end of the year. Hamish Clark, 3 News.
Yippee! We get some of these creepy little insects in my area. Elizabeth and William, living in Auckland, they get to share in the fun too. Thanks, farmers, because we've never ever had a problem with introduced species before, right? It's not like our Department of Conservation spends all its time dropping poison to manage, kill, these animals, right? The majority of which were introduced so that we could farm them. To kill them is a blood sport. To kill them for their skin, or the hair stuck in their skin. See, the totally unrealistic, idealistic, holistic, materialistic, ballistic, vegan approach would have been not to have all those burping farm animals in the first place. Those wacky vegans, they're bloody nuts, right? Nah, we'll just release a swarm of poo-eating beetles from Australia and everything will be sweet as forever and ever. Yep. You've heard how my country is a convenient 20 hours away in a thin metal tube, where people go to be as thin as possible. Now, let's see how other parts of the world are misrepresented. How about some totally legal, recorded off the television every night for several years, King of the Hill clips? King of the Hill features a family living in a fictional town in Texas called Arlen. I've long enjoyed King of the Hill. Many of my friends don't. It's a fairly average, although a little quirky family, with the right number of fingers and non-yellow skin. Each episode usually had an obvious message, a teachable moment. And supposedly, being from Texas, the family is very non-vegan, with the show having quite a few jokes at the expense of vegetarians and do-gooders throughout. The last episode ever to air had Bobby, the son judging animals' corpses to see which were the, quote, best grade of flesh. It turns out, he's the only one on his team that actually enjoys the inspections. The rest of these competitive carcass judges, they just want to win. They don't care about the actual subject. One of them is even vegetarian.
On everything!
Despair for me?
Hey, that's no way to talk about your teammate. He's saving your hides right now.
Doubtful. He's terrible. He's a Fuhrtoft.
Come on now, Bobby may have different talents than you, but one thing you all share is your love of top quality beef.
I don't care about beef. I only care about winning.
Dude, I'm a vegetarian.
What? You guys are even weirder than Bobby let on. No wonder he wanted to quit the team. I'm gonna sit in the back with the cow.
I'm not vivisecting King of the Hill to make fun of the good people of Texas or Americans. The way I wanted to make fun of those models visiting my country. No, it's just a good fun show that happens to have a lot of non-vegan subjects and makes fun of vegetarians. I don't believe the real Texas was necessarily anything like the fictional town of Arlen shown, although I was curious to see if anything was accurate. We'll find out from Barbara soon. Here, after painting his room and expressing an imagination, seeing shapes and painted clouds, we see how cruel we can be to other animals while not even considering it an act of animal cruelty.
It looks like a rabbit.
Oh, I guess that's the tail, huh? Very good, honey. What else do you see?
That one looks like a pig. No, wait. Maybe it's a ham.
Bobby, in your imagination, there are no wrong answers.
Look, Mom, a bee.
Well, yeah, I guess that could be maybe a puffy little wing and... Oh!
We even fooled a bee.
Well, that's because bees are stupid. Fool an owl. Then we'll talk.
In feel-good terms are mentioned, cruelty-free makeup. Well, perhaps it is free of cruelty, which seems to mean it's not tested on cute little white bunnies, but cruelty-free certainly might mean it contains parts of dead animals who weren't found dead and who hadn't written in their will, "When I die, I hope my body will make human-female animals look pretty, so the cute boy at school will ask her out." I think it's better to use the term vegan when it comes to being truly cruelty-free, because terms like humane, kind, they had a good life, Temple Grandin is an animal rights visionary, they can all mean pretty much anything. Something is either vegan or it's not vegan. It would be great if packaging was that simple, and we could then promote veganism as such. Did you know that non-vegan products have parts of dead bodies in them? Wouldn't you much rather have the dead body free product over here?
And next time I might not be so lucky.
Just look at Ladybird.
Oh, Ladybird. Didn't Luann make you look pretty? Pretty dog. Who's a pretty dog? Get that stuff off of her. She looks like Fran Drescher.
I didn't put it on. Your dog ate all my cruelty-free makeups.
Okay, honey, calm down. If she tries it again, you just give her a little tap on the fanny with the rolled-up newspaper.
I spent extra money to buy cruelty-free. I'll do a lot more than tap her.
For British, Australian, and New Zealand listeners, the mention of hitting her on her... that term means something else here, her female parts. I don't even like saying that particular F-word. I grew up watching that Seaside episode of The Simpsons, where Marge is swimsuit shopping with Lisa, and Marge likes one swimsuit as it has a starfish on the... Young Jordan White used to always sit upright, waiting for her to use that F-word. I'd always gasp, they can say that on television? Not to mention the little girl who lived behind us offering to show me her... I was a good little boy. I didn't want my friends to take their clothes off. Quickly moving away from New Zealand naughty words, some Asian neighbours moved next door to the Hill family in an early episode.
So are you Chinese or Japanese?
I live in California last 20 years, but first come from Laos.
Huh?
Laos. We Laotian.
The ocean? What ocean?
We are Laotian. From Laos, stupid. It's a landlocked country in Southeast Asia. It's between Vietnam and Thailand, okay? Population, 4.7 million.
So are you Chinese or Japanese?
Duh.
And that brings out the usual crass jokes about what animals are considered meat.
Aren't kids great? They're too young to know about fear or prejudice. They won't have to learn that till high school. Yep, there's a real lesson here for all of us.
Move, please. You're standing on my hose.
Dad, look. Ladybird and Doggy like each other.
Of course they do, son. They're neighbors. You know, Con, I just found a breeding partner for my Ladybird. If you're interested in having a real American dog, I can give... What the hell? Get him off! Get him off of her!
Yo, Ladybird, she real slut.
Ladybird is not a slut. She is in heat. Her hormones have overwhelmed her natural modesty. For Pete's sake, would you tie up your dog?
You tie your dog. She seduced my doggy.
That's ridiculous. Ladybird can only love another purebred Georgia bloodhound.
You know what I think, Hank Hill? I think you a narrow-minded redneck.
Oh, I get it. Just because I'm from Texas, I gotta be some kind of redneck. Chinese and their stupid stereotypes.
Get off my property!
And about cooking flesh, this episode has an amazing amount of animal rights-related topics. The lifeboat situation, the definition of friend, of social norms, how you might think someone was evil and cruel and Hitler for killing animals that are not commonly killed in your area.
Tell you, Peggy. There's nothing these people can't make better. First the automobile, then the color TV, and now the hamburger. How do they do it?
With a dash of nutmeg, Hank. A dash of nutmeg.
Oh, Peggy here! Your husband liked burgers so much, I give you a recipe. Now you can please him.
I don't care what country he's from. Any man who can make a burger like that is okay by me.
Oh, you said it. Boy, it was so good, it's almost a shame to lose it to the process of digestion.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old onion soup powder, man, just put that little bit old that. You don't need no grilled onions, man.
How about you, Dale? How many you got under your belt?
Zero.
Huh? How come?
Don't eat dog. Okay, here are the facts as I see them. Con served you dog.
Con did not serve us dog. That's just an awful stereotype. Chinese people don't really do that.
Well, I don't know. Anyone crazy enough to put nutmeg in Brown Betty, well, they'd be crazy enough to do anything.
Hey, even if they did feed us dog, you know, who are we, huh? Who are we to judge other cultures? You know, maybe they're on to something. They did invent paper, you know.
Quit talking like that. Dog is man's best friend. You wouldn't eat your best friend, would you?
Of course not. Wait, are we talking about some kind of lifeboat situation here? Because I don't want to paint myself into a corner.
Look, I can settle this right now. That woman gave us a recipe. See? Right here. It says chopped meat, not chopped dog.
Dog is meat.
Mm. You said it, friend. I was trying to get that awful taste off my fingers.
I might have to make that a regular clip. Parts of that could be useful to replay in future. There really is no difference when we kill a chicken or kill a cat. All sentient beings matter equally. Does a chicken think herself worth less than a cat would? Who gets to make this decision? Who established that often referenced the food chain? We kill them because that's the food chain, and like all chains, we are chained down by it. We cannot act independently. We are all chained together, slaves in a food chain gang. There's a bunch of us all held back by these wonderful chains. So that means any independent, free-thinking person must be wrong, wrong, wrong. You can often question these people. Okay, so where do cats sit on this food chain? I mean, we're all made out of muscle, right? And that's what you call meat. To which they reply, no, you're being sick, you're being stupid. How are you so dumb? We don't kill cats. That's evil. A different episode did feature desperate American people planning to kill and eat dogs, though, because of that millennium bug thing.
Let me handle this. My friend Chappie and I both have wives for whom we are looking for presents.
Christmas dogs to put under the tree.
Well, how about this lasso up, sir?
No, that's way too small.
Yeah. Well, let's see.
Now, this one's old and kind of ropey. My wife would not enjoy it.
Maybe you two should step away from the cages.
Please, my wife is in a wheelchair. All she wants for Christmas is a big, fat dog with lots of meat on his haunches.
I'll take all nine of those little dogs on top. Wrap them up.
There's no difference between killing dogs or killing cats or killing chickens. We can imagine a distinction based on how we have grown up, i.e., we think it's normal to dress in this way or to drive this kind of car. It does not mean it's right, it's just what's always been right around us. Chickens, cows, pigs, sheep, they all matter just as much as cats, dogs, whales, dolphins, unicorns. And when you're talking about killing other animals, it don't matter if you're black or white. I honestly don't miss anything non-vegan. I don't dream of wearing someone else's skin. I don't have fantasies of drinking someone's breast milk. I don't want to eat someone's body, even if they ask me to do these things. I simply am not interested. We grow up believing these things are normal, when they are really obviously awful. Who wants to buy someone's body in a cardboard box and throw out their bones when you're done with the corpse? We have a lot of slaughterhouses in Southland, outside of my city of course, but driving further north you'll notice them, huge white buildings in the countryside generally. You can most often smell them before you get within a few kilometres. An awful smell, strong, of shit and blood, I think. These clips from King of the Hill mention the smell of processing. That's the smell of jobs.
Well, hooray.
Where are you guys from?
Arlen, Texas.
Pig town. You a pig farmer?
I think you're confused, sir. We don't raise pigs in Arlen, Texas. We process them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you folks make them tiny breakfast weenies. But you're gonna have to leave now.
What's that smell? Ugh. I think I'm gonna throw up. Ugh.
It's just a sausage plant. That smell means jobs, Bobby.
Huh. Dead bodies and waste tend to smell. Go figure. Another example of the series, showing how the sausage is made, as it were, an episode with a wealthy man, rich from killing pigs. Turns out, he's a little crazy. I'll let these clips speak for themselves of what actually goes on in pork processing. Talk about politically correct. Everything to do with animal agriculture, aka killing more than 56 billion sentient beings a year worldwide. Each atrocity has its own little code name to detach ourselves from what it really is. Breeding animals to make their bodies a certain way, giving someone the gift of a headless body, isn't that lovely? And how this tends to have an effect on those involved.
A lot of you think of Trip Larson as the Hog King of Arlen. But he wasn't born with that crown on his head. He's an entrepreneur.
an innovator and an inventor responsible for edibilizing two new parts of the pig.
Thank you, thank you. My great-grandfather started Larson Pork Products with little more than three pigs and a killing hammer. Today, I'm proud to say, we kill more pigs than, well, pig hepatitis. There's no secret to success, really. You have to have a passion for whatever you do, whether it's processing pigs or sheep, or cattle into food and food products.
What's a food product?
It's like food, but cheaper.
Young lady, you had a question?
Yes. I find that I am too busy succeeding to keep track of all of my ideas. So, I keep them in a file.
Darn well in pork. How'd you like to interview for a position with Larson Pork Products?
Well, I did work with pork chops in my last job. Well, but to be honest, sometimes I dropped a couple.
Well, see, that's the beauty of pork. It rinses off clean.
Will you look at that?
Yeah, that's the J5. It's a little project I've been working on for quite some time now. In terms of time to processing, weight, meat yield, weanability, she's pretty much the perfect pig.
Hmm. Looks like you could eat it with a spoon.
Just give me 5 years and you will.
Oh, just like a baby. Look at her, Peggy. Remind you of someone when he was little?
Hank, how would you...
This will cook up nice, Hank. How much did it cost you, huh? $100?
Hank, the man is crazy. That headless pig is a threat.
No, it's a gift. From Trip Larson. And it's to you. I guess somebody owes Trip an apology.
There is a large dead animal on my lawn.
Look, let's be reasonable about this. I work in propane, so I give away propane. Trip Larson works with pork. So that's why he gave us this fella here.
No! You're bruising the rinds!
But they're all the same.
Nothing is exactly the same. Everything has a small flaw. Or imperfection. Drives me mad.
This last clip from the episode features the actual slaughterhouse, where we see how animals have water sprayed on them, electrically stunned with aid from that previous water, gotta make sure the sponge is wet, Percy, and killed with a spike through their head. As we find out, machinery is indiscriminate. It doesn't take sick days or give a damn. It does its job, and does regardless of what species is involved. Nobody likes a spike through their head.
I'm here, Luann! I'll take care of everything!
This is perfect. Now we can become Larson Pork Products together. Well, trust me, this is for the best. We agreed that I would do the thing for both of us.
I never agreed to be a Larson Pork Product.
Well, I thought you loved me. Pull the left lever. Now.
Let me do it.
Mama, Papa, I'm coming home.
Oh my God. I can suddenly think clearly. The voices have left my head. What am I doing in a pig costume? Uh-oh.
Well, at least Trip seemed happy. And now he's in a better place.
Honey, Trip had a mental breakdown and is now a sausage. That's not a better place. But you handled the situation very well.
I did, didn't I?
You saved yourself by thinking for yourself.
I did, didn't
I?
You are your own woman.
I am? I am! So really, it's a happy ending.
Happy enough.
Another episode has a rodeo featured, where the non-vegan Luann character mentions how cruel rodeos are. Her lines are made to be foolish, another joke, i.e., oh, those townies, they don't know how the real world works.
Bobby, you know how you used to like dressing up like a cowboy? Well, now you could do it for real. The rodeo's coming to town.
The rodeo's cruel to animals. In nature, the bull lives peacefully with the giraffe.
It is brutal. My uncle was a cowboy in the rodeo. He had to leave Vietnam because he was waking up with rodeo nightmares.
It's just the kids' calf scramble. It's fun. The animals are running around without any plays or game plans or anything. Kind of like Barry Switzer was coaching them.
I like the part where I'm running around with veal.
Often the animals are given a stupid name to make us feel stronger when we beat them. Although I did find this one kind of funny. A horse is a hearse, of course, of course.
He's going down.
And now back to the adults. Give all your encouragement to Clay Henry, because he's riding Mr. Dead. A horse is a hearse, of course, of course.
And the last clip from the rodeo episode.
Wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen. We have a late entrant in the chicken roping.
Who would do that to chickens? They could seriously have a heart attack after being chased like that. Birds generally have a high heart rate, and chickens have very clear emotions. They get distressed easily, and often take some time to be sure when the danger is over. I hear my chicken friends make a lot of noise sometimes, after they've spotted a cat who was stalking them. One of them spots the danger, makes a certain warning call, and the others look where the first chicken was indicating, and they all go nuts. It takes them at least a minute to calm down, when the cat has been shooed away, although not with a shoe. We save those for politicians in undeveloped nations like New Zealand. I was listening to Roger Yates' last fantastic, exquisite, superfluous episode. He mentions a campaigner pointing out that fishing is a blood sport. Here's a clip from King of the Hill about killing fish, where factory-farmed worms are mentioned. We see that even those who are quite seriously opposed to veganism care about feeling good for their choices, that they are not supporting factory-farmed worms while they drown them, attempting to get another animal to bite into a metal hook.
Oh, I'm cold. Why don't we just buy the worms at a bait shop?
Bait shop worms are factory farm worms. They keep them in little cages their whole lives. They never get to run around free. It's sad, really. And the fish know the difference.
Why don't you just buy the fish?
Bobby, you're missing the point. We don't fish for the fish. 90% of what I like about this sport, and it is a sport, is sitting in the boat for 5 hours doing nothing. And the icing on the cake is when God smiles on you and you hook one. And then when you're reeling it in, everything else falls away. You don't think about taxes or traffic or that pushy gal that's trying to get into the Citadel or who's going to take care of you when your mother and I are old and incapacitated. All there is a man, a rod, a lake, and a fish. And it all starts with a hand-dug American worm.
Dad. Who is going to take care of me?
If that's what it's really about, why don't you just go and sit somewhere and do nothing without hurting or killing anyone else? I mentioned cruelty to a farmer recently. They had said about how bobby trucks could be cruel sometimes. The trucks where day-old or few-day-old male calves are put on to be taken away and killed. They are useless to the so-called dairy industry, not being able to be forcibly impregnated, have children, and produce milk for them. So, they are killed as quickly and cheaply as possible. Many farmers prefer to put them on the truck, and they are driven away to be killed at a slaughterhouse, rather than kill these defenseless animals themselves. Most seem to mention feeling bad about it when the truck comes, but as soon as it's gone, they try not to think about what's just happened to those beautiful animals. They do something to take their minds off it. One farmer mentions recording the truck man literally throwing and kicking the calves onto the truck, how this was horrible, and how the video had been shown to the truck company, who also claimed to be outraged. My question, why would the defenseless animals really give a damn whether they are kicked and thrown about in that situation? They don't know it, how could they? But they are being driven to their deaths. They must certainly know they've been taken away from their mother, and she damn well knows that too. They don't know they are being driven in a vehicle to their deaths, but they certainly would not want it to happen. What's the real animal cruelty? Seeing someone else's property is waste, needing to be killed as soon as possible to save your money, and being thrown and kicked onto the truck. Or, being seen as property is waste, needing to be killed as soon as possible, and somehow gently put on the truck to the death slaughterhouse. If you were given the choice between being kicked and thrown or killed, what would you choose? Which is cruel and which is humane? It's a little like worrying that death row inmates have alcohol swabbed on their arm before the lethal injection. Don't want them to pick up a disease, you know. Not when they're going to be dead in a minute's time. Oh no, couldn't have that, could we? It makes more sense to say, hey, developed nations shouldn't kill people, especially ultra-conservative religious ones where you're worried about the government being too big and able to offer health and welfare to her citizens. Huh. Their job should just be limited to punishing and killing those citizens. I'd campaign for not killing people, not asking for people not to attend the execution if they have a cold, don't want Mr. Murderer to catch the flu going around a minute before he's killed. A similar situation, the teaching of the birds and the bees to your children, not wanting to see or think about reality.
All I'm saying is keep the government out of the bedroom business. Teaching my boy the facts of life is my job.
Damn, you got that right.
Mm-hmm.
Hank, I couldn't get the words out.
Oh, gee, you didn't send her in to do a man's job, did you?
Maybe
you should let Boomhauer teach him what he knows.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, he tell him about them dang old condom dispenser with them. He'd put a little 50 cents in there and he'd try to hit that corner, turn it, bang on that thing, and just talk about her needs.
No, that's all right. I guess I'll do it. My daddy told me the facts of life when I was Bobby's age, and I turned out okay.
Yee-haw-haw! Hey, what you crying for, boy? It's a good show. This is a damn good show.
Yeah. That's also how he taught me about paying taxes.
Honey, tell me, what is it like to live without shame of any kind? Is it a good feeling?
Yeah, it is.
Well, I guess I am a little jealous. Things were very different when I was a girl.
Honey, you're at that special time of life. The time when a little girl becomes a woman. And you start getting a monthly visitor.
Who? Uncle Joe?
My mother gave me this and I'm passing it on to you.
The loveliness of woman. There's nothing in here but pictures of flowers.
I never even kissed a boy until I was 20. You know, there's a funny thing happening down at school. They want me to teach this sex ed stuff to our kids' class, you know, but I just don't know if I can overcome the crippling sense of shame that I got from my mother.
Whew! Well, we knew you wouldn't.
Yeah, I've been telling people, Peggy Hill is not one of those teachers that puts all that intellectual hooey above common decency.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes a little intellectual hooey is a good thing.
Look, we all grew up not knowing the real words for your dinky and your woo-hoo, and we turned out fine.
I learned about sex from my mother. She gave me that wonderful book, The Loveliness of Woman.
That book is worthless.
Well, I got a lot out of it. When my husband would crawl all over me at night and do his business, well, I would just close my eyes and think of them pretty flowers.
Oh, Bonnie, you poor, poor woman.
Texas. Well, there used to be a dairy farm out here somewhere. Oh, there we go.
Gracie, this is Mr. Hill. Brought his son over to learn the facts of life.
Well, he sure came to the right place. We call this machine the Matchmaker 500.
Now, Bobby, you're coming to a time in your life when you're going to start to have tender feelings for a girl. You're going to need to know what those feelings mean and what to do about them. Where's the...
Dad?
What?
I just wanted to say you don't have to worry about me because I'm never going to have sex.
Oh, Bobby, now don't say that.
I thought that's what you wanted.
Well, yes, if you were my daughter, but you're my son.
Why is it not okay for girls, but it's okay for boys?
It's called the double standard, Bobby. Don't knock it. We got the long end of the stick on that one.
I see. That's why Mom's bad for talking about sex.
Bobby, look, just because your mom's been using those words doesn't mean she's bad. She's just trying to do her job. Give the kids the proper names for things. Imagine how hard that is for your mother, trying to teach a room full of snickering fifth graders the difference between a boy and a girl's, hookups. That woman's got a lot of guts, I'll tell you what.
I like this episode's idea of sugarcoating things, the Book of Pretty Flowers. I thought of that while my husband did his business. The idea of seeing reality and being conditioned to believe in something else, something fantasy. We know that chicken flesh comes from a chicken, that they were alive, that they were killed, yet we believe it's different, somehow. We're told and believe that they enjoy having this done to them, that they don't care, that the people involved in the industry care about these sentient beings and are being kind to them. Which is like this fantasy idea of humanely raised animals. Of a world where slaughterhouse designers can be awarded Animal Rights Visionary Awards by the world's largest animal rights group. Let's tell the truth. Let's promote veganism. I see animal rights as linked with other rights recognition, that we are all animals, we are sentient beings, that other animals, other sentient beings matter too. That they have as much right to life, to being free, as you or me. That it doesn't matter if we are tall or short, New Zealander or Australian, we're all equal, although in that last case, some are more equal than others. Whether we are gay or straight, fat or thin, male or female, whether you pee standing up or sitting down, what goes around comes around. Some don't agree with that though, they want to cover things up and place bans, like parts of America where you can't badmouth certain industries. Where they're trying to ban recording what we do to other animals, or even telling the truth to other people, like Oprah and Howard Lyman, where you can get sued for telling the truth if it's said to hurt a large industry. You're just a person. You don't have rights. Huge corporations do. They pay more tax than you, unless they're GE and pay nothing. So they matter more than a hard-working mother or father, or single person with chicken friends. In another episode, an x-ray of the non-vegan Hank is shown in a modern art exhibit, where apparently the cause of his problem was from flesh. His son, Bobby, also has a flesh-related problem, gout. Isn't it great being vegan, where we don't get any of these crazy problems? Oprah is mentioned. Keep an eye out, agave nectar.
Wonder what they're all staring at.
Probably the best running back Arlen High has ever known.
That's what I was staring at the whole ride here.
Well, you know.
Empty Bowl, Bhopal, India. Beef-filled colon, Arlen, Texas, huh? Look, Hank, Dr. Morley took this x-ray. That's the name of your doctor. Oh, dear Lord. Hank? Honey, I think this is your colon from when you were constipated.
Oh, my God.
Hi, please. People are starting to look.
Excuse me. This is my work. My art is not to be touched. If you want interactive art, there's a highly overrated collection in Toronto.
Your work? That's my colon.
Ooh.
Huh?
Hank, maybe we should just go.
Not without my property.
Doctor says it's very rare. I'm the only kid under 70 to get this outside the gout belt in the lower Balkans. I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
About your big opening.
Yeah, Dale. It's even funnier the third time.
Hey, Hank Hill. Look what I buy in gift shop at museum. You sign it. It'd be worth more money.
Hey, woo! Look at me, I'm Hank Hill, and I just passed wind. Quick, somebody frame it. Ow!
Hey, there's nothing funny about this, you hillbilly moron. Can't you see the juxtaposition of Hank's clogged-up colon with that skinny, starving kid make deep statement about something? They cast stones at your colon from ignorance, Hank. Your ass is genius. Can you give me your guest list for Shishi Art Gallery parties?
Bobby? What are you doing? You smell like cat food. You're eating chopped liver, aren't you?
It comes with the platter.
Bobby, I searched every shop looking for just the right dress, which I finally found. And here you are, eating all the stuff that gives you gout.
I just came in to use the restroom.
Bobby, I found some good empty meat in the back. I know how you like it.
You would rather stuff yourself and roll around in your stupid electric cart than take me to the dance?
Well, I guess I would. Carl, give me a plate of kippers and onions.
I don't know, Bobby. Don't you think you've had enough?
Well, I'll tell you when I've had enough.
Sir, if I could just get off a few hours early, I need to go to Dallas.
Oh, right, right. That picture of your butt pipe with all that beef gumming up the works.
You gotta chew more, honey.
When I think of what they're doing to the good name of beef.
Those damn Oprahs.
And what ain't good for beef ain't good for barbecues, Hank. And what ain't good for barbecues ain't good for propane.
I came to take down that picture of my private insides. As for the Indian fella, I guess that's between you and him.
All right, Mr. Hill, I think we've had enough. Security, throw that man out.
I'll do you one better. Sheriff?
All right. You the fellas who perpetrated this art? You're under arrest.
What are you talking about? I've got the right of free expression.
Oh, you can have all the free speech you want. Within the law. And in the state of Texas, there's a law against defaming beef. Sheriff, my colon.
You realize you will never have another avant-garde art exhibit in this state.
We'll get by.
Well, gout occurs when uric acid crystals form in the bloodstream and collect in an extremity. Like Bobby's big toe.
Now hold on, maybe turf toe was a pipe dream, but gout? That's an old man's disease.
Hey, I'm not going to tell you it's normal for a 12-year-old boy to get gout. But it happens. Like that feral boy they found surviving on pig excrement? What you need to do is quit pumping your boy full of purine-rich foods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And those are?
Preserved fish, like anchovies or herrings and organ meats. You know, kidneys, hearts, liver.
The boy's not a ghoul. He doesn't eat that stuff.
Is there liver and chopped chicken liver? Because that's what's on a Louis Anderson.
What?
I've been getting it at the Showbiz Deli.
Oh!
Bobby's gout will clear up if he stays off those deli foods. In the meantime?
All non-vegan products are ghoulish. It's all disgusting. My last two clips, and they're short. See, what kind of person could possibly be against killing animals for our enjoyment? You'd have to be weird to avoid eating other animals, right? Like in a cult, sure. The way to brainwash someone? Withhold flesh. And to break the evil spell? Why, just give them someone's flesh. Yeah, that'll cure them.
Good morning, Omegas.
Rice for breakfast? We had rice for dinner. I'm losing weight because I haven't had any meat. And I lose weight in my chest bursts.
You think you are hungry, but you're not. Your body lies to you, just like your parents. But you can trust us. We will tell you when you're hungry. We will tell you when you're tired.
Will you tell me if I have to go to the bathroom right now? Because I feel like I do, but a lot of times when I get there, I don't. And I just sit there and hum.
No! No bathroom! Number one and number two is something you did before you became an Omega. We're going to take you someplace where you only go. Number three. It's called the Omega Ranch.
This must be where we're going for spring break.
The ranch is quiet and secluded so you can concentrate on making our famous jams and jellies. They're so delicious, especially when smeared on a piping hot English muffin. The ranch is also where you'll get to meet Jane.
How's it going, ladies? Have a large meat lover's pizza for Luann?
Me!
You have an independent streak that makes it very difficult for us to love you.
They've been deprived of protein so long that their bodies are feeding off their own brains. They're nothing but soulless automatons.
This is a job for meat.
Jane's, the bus is here. Leave everything from your old lives behind. Except work gloves. You'll need those.
Ugh! My arm! It's cramping! I'm down!
Dang it, Dale! My wife is in there! Keep fanning! Peggy! You can't get on the bus! Trust me, you joined a cult!
Jam, jelly, jam, jelly, jam, jelly, jam, jelly.
Come on, come on!
No! Do not listen to that he person! He is on the wrong side of the love fence!
This man looks like he could use some jam and jelly. I'm sorry, Hank. My new friends have invited me to spend eternity, I think, with them.
Well, all right. Have fun, then. But maybe you'd like a bite for the road.
Jane, get back here!
My name is not Jane. My name is Peggy. And I love meat.
Can you smell that? Can you? Look! That guy's giving out food! I'm sorry. I'm just so freaking hungry.
This one tickles too.
That's funny. I can't remember my name. I think it starts with an R.
Right. It's Luann.
Jane, come back! Jam, jelly! Jane's, come back!
So that's King of the Hill, one of my favourite cartoon series, because most episodes have a simple message, and whether it's positive or negative, laughing with or laughing at us, I think it's ultimately moving forward if more people at least know what veganism is. We'll get there by promoting veganism, using the word vegan, by wearing t-shirts made by Emmy James, and being a member of Animal Rights and Rescue North Texas. Interestingly, I never knew Mike Judge, King of the Hill creator and voice of many characters. He also had a terribly received series, The Good Family. This was never shown in New Zealand. I'm heartbroken. I found out about it while planning this episode. It was all about an ultra-liberal, progressive, vegan family, and the jokes involved their views of the world. It really looks great, packed with satire at vegans, adults who ride bikes, people who reuse shopping bags. I think it's fantastic that such a show could be put on air, that children could grow up knowing about vegans. I can just think of how much I know about the world, albeit exaggerated, through cartoons such as The Simpsons. For example, I've always known Republicans were evil, that cats and mice hate each other and the mice beat up the cats. Sure, why not? The cat is made from glass and can be blown into a neon light, and that the only Scottish guy in a given city has to drive a tractor and is called Willy. Here's a short clip from The Good Family about the dog, who is only fed vegan dog food. I'm really blown away that this could be in a modern cartoon series, with all these mentions of veganism in every single episode, even if it's very negative, like this one, where the vegan-fed dog dreams of eating other animals and is always denied. Apparently, he ends up eating other pets in the neighbourhood. His desire to be non-vegan extends to cannibalism.
care what anyone says. Pierce Brosnan was a great James Bond.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. This isn't your vegan dog food. Oh, you poor boy. You almost ate meat. I'm so sorry, Che.
Look at him. He's shaking with fear about what he almost did.
Stop slobbering on my leg.
Yes, it makes fun of us. It's not fair. I don't particularly like that running gag. Ha, huh, vegans are mean to animals. They force everyone and everything else to do what they say, when it's bad for... I'm still really surprised that a modern show can reference and feature a family of vegans, even if the Good Family, G-O-O-D-E, family, only ran a single season and got terrible ratings. We can show people veganism is not unhealthy, that vegans are not weirdos, except the ones who are, and that it's great to be vegan, just by being ourselves, and promoting veganism. Here's someone who's never had terrible ratings, though. Barbara DeGrand of Veganacious and Animal Rights and Rescue, North Texas. And joining me right now, it's very late where she is, I have my friend Barbara DeGrand of Texas. How are you, Barbara?
I'm fine, Jordan. How are you doing?
It's wonderful here, and I thought it would be great to have Barbara on because she lives in Texas, and it's an animal agriculture area. We all know sort of the Texas Longhorns and things and cowboys and the like is sort of the image that we get from cartoons like King of the Hill. And my own area is known for dairying, mostly. And I think it's quite interesting that we're two friends and we live on different sides of the world, and our areas are both known for the same things, although our areas are quite different. My area is a lot of rain here. We have green fields. I don't really think of the images I've seen from popular culture of Texas having green fields full of cattle. Is that the truth?
Actually, that's one of the big surprises for me when I moved here. It gets quite green here, and it stays much greener here than it did in California because we get a lot of rain here.
Okay. And with cows in the area, do they live outdoors all the time?
There aren't any, they're cows, but there aren't like big herds of cattle or anything near where I live. That would be a little bit north of here. And the only cows I really know in Texas are the ones at my friend's farm animal sanctuary.
Okay. Would that be the norm, though, because we sort of hear from the welfare sort of reform things about concentrated animal feed outs or feedlots or whatever, and the move is sort of indoors and grain fed?
I mean, I saw a CAFO when I was in California. I haven't seen any CAFOs out here, but as far as where the indoor animal agriculture is, I know there are some huge concerns here. I just don't think they're right exactly where I live, so I probably don't pass them as part of my daily living. I was disturbed to find out they also have hunting ranches here where they get animals from zoos and other places, and they're penned up, and then people can come and pay, you know, for shooting for a fee. So the mindset towards animals is, you know, we have a lot of work to do here.
To reference King of the Hill, I've seen episodes where they have canned hunts and they sort of perch them out above a grain feeder. It spreads out food and the animals come right up to it and then they just shoot them sort of point blank. And I have heard of things like that in the fenced in areas and things. And isn't it weird that we see it as a sign of masculinity, I guess you could say, to be a big man and to kill a gentle animal, and especially in that fashion when they come right up to you? And it's quite odd. We do have a lot of trophy hunting in the mountains of my area, and we have tourists that come from around the world to shoot our animals. I don't know why it makes a difference to them if goats in New Zealand make them more manly killing our goats than killing goats in their own country. But there's a clip I'm going to play in a future episode, and it's about the man Crafer, and he was a farmer that got $200 million New Zealand in debt. That's $150 million or so US. And he talks about how he loved cows so much and how he had one of their heads on a wall, and he thought that she looked handsome, which I thought was an odd thing to say for a female, but a handsome female cow, and he thought that the back end of her, as he put it, would taste good. So they ate the back end of her, as he put it, and put the front half of her head or her neck up on the wall.
Now 13 days since the Crafer family were meant to have left their farm. They're still there.
and they still owe $200 million. The banks want that money back now, and the receivers say they're going to get it. Tonight, for the first time on television, we have both sides of that story in full. In a moment, the receivers on what they've got up their sleeves, but first down on the farm, here's Tristram Clayton.
She's just a handsome-looking Ayrshire cow that I thought would look good on the wall, and I thought the back end of her would taste nice, so we ate that. And
it's fair to say Alan Crafer loves cows.
Yeah, no, cows are what we do. Cows are our life.
Isn't that an odd thing?
It's a very disturbing thing, I think, that you know, that we can, we're so commodifying these animals that we can't even see what we're doing to them.
Can you, could you talk a little bit about the longhorn kind of image in Texas that we see? It's sort of a stereotype thing. The horns on Cadillac cars, is that an actual thing, or is that just an old stereotype?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both. You see the longhorn image around a lot because it's the name of one of the sports teams around here. And you see a lot on kind of like pop culture, you know.
Yeah. Okay, but that's another odd thing in itself, though, the idea that it makes us more masculine to kill animals like that, isn't it? And yet they're the most gentle animals when you think of cows and motherhood and everything to do with it. It's just a very odd image. It's not such a New Zealand thing, but I'm sure we do it here as well. And you mentioned that you've started up a group. Would you like to talk about your group, Barbara?
Yeah, it's been really, I just did a post on Veganacious about it today because it's been such a learning experience. I didn't expect it to be quite as challenging to get our foot in the door. It's one of the problems we're having. When we started the group up in the wintertime and the weather was really bad and it snowed the day of our first kickoff meeting and no one showed, and that was rather disappointing. And then we had another kickoff meeting, take two, and that one turned out a lot better. We had some enthusiastic people and got lots of ideas, got our first project. We just determined we were going to do vegan food sampling somewhere. And so we were going to try to get in at maybe Whole Foods or Kroger, two of the stores that actually carry vegan food, and had no luck. The stores either were not interested or they had concerns about liability. And I'm getting that resistance. I just was trying to get into a local event in May today and didn't have any luck. So I think I'm going to just have to be very tenacious. I looked at maybe getting into the farmer's market. It's difficult here because anything outdoors, we're really limited between extreme heat and extreme cold. So people don't tend to be outdoors here very much. And I can't expect our volunteers to be out in extremely adverse weather. So that's one limitation that, you know, we have. But we're having a benefit garage sale at the beginning of next month. And that will hopefully get us enough funds to pay for the fees for some of these events that we want to do and pay our fees for meetup and what have you. But the one of the exciting parts of the group is we're part of the Federation of Abolitionist Vegans.
That.
Yeah, and that's just getting the website is just being developed. I had it linked on Veganacious, but I unlinked it because I'm going to wait a day or two until it's a little more complete, and then I'll relink it on the blog. But it's a great site. It's going to have outreach literature, forums for discussion. You can register on the site and you know, link your group. And I was telling our group about it, and they were really excited about the idea because Our last meetup was at the local Loving Hut, and that was so exciting because one of the problems here is we're really far. We have a lot of open land here, and cities are really far from one another. It's not like where I used to live where I could have walked to work and I could have walked to the mall and I could have walked to the doctors or downtown. Everything was real close. Here, you know, it could take you an hour to go to the dentist or something because everything's so spread out. So to find events that people, you know, with gas being expensive, that people are willing to drive to on their day off and that isn't too far, and yet to keep a group because we're really spread out as far as where our membership is too. So that's another challenge for us. But they were real excited about having this international website where we could connect with other little tiny groups like ours all over the world and get some shared support and share, you know, outreach literature and all kinds of stuff. So I think it's really a wonderful idea. That this was an idea that came from Chris Pupar of Canada, and he's working on that this week too to finalize it.
Well, just so long as you never forget that you're always going to be a card-carrying member of the mighty Invercargill Vegan Society. I'm just looking at some of the business cards you sent me with your meetup group on it, and I think it's great. Any effort that keeps all these little groups in contact. I shouldn't say we're a little group. We're a massive group, the Invercargill Vegan Society, and we're doing great things down here. We sure are, and it's great to meet anyone that's promoting veganism. Have you heard of many other of these groups? I remember the Peace Advocacy Network, and I think there's quite a few other ones.
I know, looking at them when I was searching on them recently, I found a few across the United States, and I found there were people waiting for a group too. I think what I did was I just kind of dived in, not so much with anything but hope and optimism. But I've been pleased, like at this group, a couple of times I thought, gee, maybe this isn't going to happen and I'll just have to close it. That's okay. You know, we try. But at this last meetup, people were actually, it was like we were long lost brothers. They were so excited to be in a restaurant that was all vegan and to meet other vegans. And people were saying, thank you for having this group. And one guy took off work to come to the group, and a couple of people had to drive really far. And one of the new members was a gal that had really serious health issues and has gotten off medication since she became vegan. And she is so excited for so many reasons. And so it's really nice for me to talk to all these people, different ages, different perspectives, different experiences becoming vegan. And, you know, we want to get out there and we want to do some outreach, but we're being patient because we're in our infancy. Right now, we're just trying to get the organization strong and, you know, grow the membership. And we just ordered one of those banners so that we can put, okay. It says Animal Rights and Rescue of North Texas, promoting peace for all beings. And it's like a big vinyl banner that we can put on our table when we do tabling events. So we're just getting kind of in preparation for what's going to come.
Well, it sounds great. It sounds absolutely great that you're getting out there and doing things. I've been keeping up with the recent law or proposed laws in America. Whereabouts is it the state that wants to ban the filming of farms and the like?
Well, it's in more than one state. I just saw something. I think it's more than one state. I know in Maine, I think it was the last one I read, or Minnesota. I can't remember. I'm really bad at things like that, details. But it was an M state that they were pushing that law. And Texas is pretty regulated when it comes to the citizens and not very regulated when it comes to the businesses. So it makes it really difficult for us in some ways. I think some of what we were asked to do just to do vegan food sampling was more than some of the major bakeries that I see in New York City. You know, you can see these shows on TV where they're baking cakes thousands a day and they don't have gloves on. And here's two or three little vegan food samplers and we have to use, we can't do, you know, our own cupcakes or make our own food. We have to use only packaged food and have to all wear gloves. And it's frustrating. I see people out there with their cookies and their cupcakes, and I know we could interest people here, but we haven't found any place that will let us do it. So,
okay, that sounds very different than sort of the Elizabeth Collins kind of outfit, where yes. Elizabeth's able to hand out cupcakes with William and Emmy have joined them. It sounds a great initiative. So you're not allowed to have, what would you call it, home-cooked or homemade things? It has to be a packaged goods?
The places I've talked to so far have not permitted anything but packaged goods, but I haven't crossed all the bridges yet. So I'm going to have to get more information on outreach. There's a couple ways I can go. I'm going to get a hold of a couple of the local counties, and then Mercy for Animals has a office in Dallas, and I thought I might try to talk someone over there. See eye to eye with them on everything they're doing, but they do have a Texas presence. And because they're an organization with lots of full-time employees and money, they may be able to guide me about, you know, what's possible for outreach. They did have, I see they had a food sampling event recently for the meet out. And I did try to get a hold of somebody over there, but I didn't get a return on my call. So maybe later, but, you know, one day at a time. I just have to be real patient and, know that it's all going to happen in its own time.
Do you think things with promoting vegan on the street, is it easy to do in Texas? You mentioned not being able to give out food you make, and I mention that because I've played, of course you and I heard it, we're absolutely not recording this before I've made the episode. I'm going to play, I have played a clip, and it's about hand kill and food disparagement laws in Texas, and about anything that sort of jeopardizes beef, as they call it, in any way. Do you think, does that have an impact on us promoting veganism in a state with laws like that?
I think so. The one good thing, I've called two different farmers market and talked to them about having a vegan tabling event, and one of the things that people here do seem interested in is the health, not so much the environment, the personal health issues, because we have some of the most high rates of obesity here of anywhere, and people that I've talked to are usually really fascinated with the idea of, you know, feeling better and eating healthier, because it's probably pretty hard here when you've grown up with this kind of food to imagine, you know, eating differently. But honestly, I look at some of the food that people eat and it looks like suicide food to me. I mean, it's just so full of animal fat. And
well, I was blown away by the Oprah episode and just people talking about, I can go to the toilet again on this vegan diet, and this vegan diet where you're not allowed sugar and coffee and things, because that's part of veganism apparently. Or this veganist, maybe, diet, we should say. And yeah, it staggers me, because I've never even really thought about promoting sort of a health, or I do mention environmental reasons, but it's always about ethical reasons. It's always about putting that little N, taking you, looking at yourself in the mirror, as a famous musician might say, taking that little U and turning it into an N by rotating it, and then you sort of put that little N and fried chicken becomes chicken friend. It's all about friendship and ethics with me. And the idea of people saying, wow, I can go to the toilet again after being on this veganist diet. Thank you, Kathy Freston and Oprah. As if they're sort of a personal savior, and that it's sort of like, shouldn't your body work? Isn't that kind of a given? Isn't it a human right that you should have sort of decent health? But I suppose if you have had health issues and it's quite common just from the diet and lifestyle, I suppose that a veganish or a veganist diet might sound like a miracle.
Well, I think if we're going to do vegan outreach here, we have to go with lots of goodwill and optimism and look at where we can intersect with people's thinking. Because I was talking yesterday to someone about doing outreach here. It was someone that's grown up here, and they were telling me that they kind of were taking the veganist approach, I guess, saying that people aren't going to accept the ethical reason, and that you have to, because their thinking is so, so different, and that you're going to have to do, you know, a little bit at a time, and that people aren't going to, you know, ever give up eating meat and all that kind of thinking. And I don't know, I've been noticing this week, I've been listening to different clips too, and veganism is becoming a lot more part of pop culture. I was just listening to an old Brothers and Sisters clip where I guess the oldest son had gone off to Mexico for some retreat, and it was all vegan food so that he could get centered, and he came back looking so good and, you know, feeling so good, and they were all kind of making fun of it. But also it was presented in somewhat of a positive light. Of course, meanwhile, we're hearing 1,000 times every hour things that reinforce the status quo. But I do think it's becoming more of a presence. And, you know, we saw it in Martha Stewart and in Oprah and these places. And they're maybe not all perfect, but at least we're here and we're vocal and we're a presence. And I do think people are becoming aware of what a vegan is. I haven't had anybody ask me what's a vegan. That's one good thing. Even here, no one's ever asked me what's a vegan when I tell them I'm a vegan.
Well, I think there's a man in Ireland, and he's either a sociopath or a sociologist or something like that. And he mentions about the word vegan in itself. What was the term you used? Creatively maladjusted?
Oh, the quote?
Yeah, it's a lovely compliment to give someone. You're creatively maladjusted. It's interesting to think that the term vegan itself is so young. Is it 1944 that the Vegan Society and everything? And then we have this new term, vegan-ish and vegan-ished and Kathy Freston-ist and vegan. And imagine if the word vegan, it's been pushing all this long, all the people before there were Loving Huts and Whole Foods and all these things that I don't know about. Imagine if the whole vegan movement just sort of dies and it becomes, oh yes, everyone, the whole world is vegan-ist. It's kind of interesting. So do you think it's always helpful to have such a huge momentum, a giant snowball building up? I think it definitely sounds interesting that you mentioned bookshops in your area, that you didn't see any animal rights text so much, but you saw Kathy Freston's books.
You know, that was one of my hardest days since I've been in Texas, I must admit. I had this wonderful gift certificate, very generous from the holidays, and I was going to go to the local Borders bookstores to cash it in, and I had a whole list of animal rights type books that I was interested in, and they had not a single book in the store, and I asked and they said no. I kept asking, how about this book or that book? No, they didn't have that. And I even asked for any progressive books, some politically progressive books, and they had, I think, one in the whole store. And when I went over there, they had an entire bookshelf, I mean, from top to bottom, of George Bush's book. And several.
Can he even read, let alone write a book?
Well, someone wrote it for him, but it's out there
Cheney.
On the shelves.
And Karl then, Rove. Yeah.
And he was transforming as we speak. The last few years, he's been turning slowly but surely into Gollum. Like, they don't like us. Don't give a shit, not caring why. Halliburton is the precious. It's the precious. And he's become an archetype now. It's the type of thing that if you want to frighten a little child, you just have to say, if you're not good, the Cheney man will get you.
No!
And then they had a... shelf after shelf of Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and not a single book on animal rights. And then when I went to the food section, there were stacks of the Kathy Freston book. And it was, you know, I haven't read the book, so I don't want to make a judgment on the book. I hope that it does indeed help the cause of awakening people to what's going on for animals. But the book itself starts out on diet. And you know, she's a model. And I would hope that we would have a little more of a conscience about what we're doing, but that's what was out there. So,
well, the bookstores in Invercargill, New Zealand, the few that we have before they, you know, they go the way of the dodo, and we get everything through iTunes and the iPad, hopefully, because it's quite cool that a lot of schools here and a low decile economic, something like that, the poor schools is how we'd say it, non-politically correct. Each student's getting given an iPad, so that's exciting, and text, and that's going the way. So maybe we don't need to rely on bookstores carrying Gary Francione's work and the veganist manifesto or whatever it's called. It's exciting to think that at least that there are more books out there, I guess, and I just hope that as there are more vegans and more vegans promoting veganism and not veganistism or veganishism, there will be more vegans, and I do think it's sad if you can't cook things and give them to people. it sounds kind of odd, but okay, if it's for health reasons or some kind of regulation like that. I'm pretty sure that Elizabeth loves what she's doing in Auckland, and I think it would be great to do that myself. I don't know how well I'd do it doing it by myself, but I really do want to get more active on the street. I don't want to just rely on online stuff, and I always make sure I'm a card-carrying member of everything I can. I carry your business cards with me. I always have my own ones, and it got mentioned on a radio show in Wellington, which is quite interesting, Animal Rights and Wrongs, which I'll talk about in a future episode. And they mentioned...
But, I mean, hasn't the internet made that a whole lot easier?
Yeah, it has. Yeah. You've got to back it up. It's no good being out there and being right in the face about what they're eating if you can't come up with a good alternative that's easy to do. You've got to have that information when you're going to, you know, to tell people it's pussing the milk and feces in the meat. You've got to come up with the goods, haven't you, to say this is what's the better thing to do.
Even a little business card with a couple of websites on it is a good idea.
That's what that guy in Invercargill's got, eh?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Jordan Wyatt.
Yeah, that guy in Invercargill who carries around business cards with sort of websites printed on them, the address. So as long as we always have information, I think it really works out well promoting veganism in whatever way we can.
I know some of the members were asking about leaving cards in different places around town too. And I said, by all means, you know, let's get the word out there any way we can. I think there are places that we will find to do outreach. I just think I haven't been able to find them yet because I don't know exactly how to go about it probably. But I think it's going to be a little bit harder to maybe hear than places. I know Mercy for Animals was doing some kind of, they hand out flyers like at concerts and things. So I know it's possible, but we really decided when our group met that we didn't want to just hand something to people. Mm-hmm. We wanted people to come up and talk to us because we had a reason for them to come up, that we had something that interested them. That's why the food sampling was enticing, because we know there's some of the food is really good and people don't would not know it was vegan if they just ate it, you know, the cakes and cupcakes, cookies, all that kind of stuff, that as well as some of the other food that we eat on a regular basis is delicious, and people just aren't used to they just have no idea what veganism even means. It just seems so overwhelming to some people.
Well, I can totally agree with that.
We have to dispel some of those myths, because it's not true. Well, I would encourage anyone else that's even thinks they there might be someone else in the area to consider doing a meetup, because the meetup system does a lot of the work for you. There's an online presence, and then as time goes on, people are interested, they can join. The downside is that sometimes people join that may attend one or two events, but you're going to, like all groups, there's usually 20% of people that do 80% of the work, and that's fine. But I can see already we have a core group of people that are quite enthusiastic and willing to do some volunteer work. And most of the members are already involved in some other form of animal advocacy already. So, you know, they've done some kind of either animal rescue or vegan outreach or something that brings them into the fold. So if you're at all considering, or if you just are a vegan that it feels like the only lonely in your area, it's so wonderful to meet other vegans, even if you just do it for support until you can get enough members. I think there's some value to it. And it does, you know, through this federation, it helps the presence internationally become more visible to more people. So get out there and start up a group.
Well, I can agree with that. I've been going to all the vegetarian and even sort of animal welfare promoting groups here, and I'm always the vegan there, and I always carry vegan information, and I always have my bags and cards with me. And I think it's great just to meet other people, and part of me thinks maybe they are more open to, I mean, they've sort of bought into the free range thing, and I always make sure that I go there and always say that I disagree very strongly with that. I don't want to help them out. Campaigning for no cages, as they call it now. You can take that as you want, no cages, which I presumably cage-free is okay, free-range is okay, whatever you want to define it as. And they can respect me for that, and I do think that at least some of them have tried veganism. I don't know if they stay vegan or not. I don't always get to talk to them all the time. It just depends on where they go. And so I go to the SAFE meetings, and they promote welfare reform. And I've went once now to a vegetarian cooking class, and I was told by the man who runs it, Alan Steele. Hi, Alan, if you're listening. I was told that it was going to be a vegan day and everything was vegan, and they actually made two separate versions of the dishes, which I felt kind of weird about. I watched them in the pans and the dishes side by side, and some of them they were putting eggs into and cheese, and it kind of made me feel kind of gross, really. So it's just good being out there and getting out there and wearing little I'm vegan and I love you badges on your work overalls and things, and just really self-promoting and promoting veganism. And I mean, I don't know if I should set myself any lofty goals. I'm the only vegan that I know of here and that I see regularly. I hear there's others, and I'm trying to meet them and see about promoting more veganism and having, since we're allowed to give away food, I'd like to, that we've made ourselves, I'd like to do things like that as well. And I guess I don't really need to have a goal to convert everyone to veganism with sort of a vegan ray or some kind of indoctrination. And, you know, once little Jordan Wyatt, once he's lived his life out and gone up the crematorium chimney, as long as there's more vegans here than before I came here, I think that would be a worthy goal for myself. So, and maybe everyone will be veganish or veganist then, and no one will remember even what veganism meant. So It's always good to...
Well, we can't let that happen.
Well, I think it's always good to try our best, and I know I'm trying my best, and it's great to talk to you, Barbara, because I know you're doing a great job in Texas.
Well, you know, Jordan, you did mention one thing before we go. I like what you said about going to these other groups where there is some way that you might connect, whether it's vegetarian or animal welfare. When you're in an area like ours where there aren't a lot of vegans to connect with, that's a great way to have a presence there. And that's some of what I'm trying to do, too, is collaborate with other animal rescue type groups, because I know some of them are not yet vegan, but they are a little more open to thinking about anything that impacts animals. And so they, if we can help them make that connection, it might be another way in. I know some of them are vegetarian, and they are vegetarian for ethical reasons. They just don't understand the issues. It's, you know, like I said, there's some work to be done, some education. So I'm trying to become friendly with some of those groups. And truly, I am interested in what they're doing. I know they can help me learn about the rescue piece of it. And maybe I can help them learn about the vegan piece of it. So, you know, we can kind of help educate each other.
I never knew about veganism. And I think maybe that's how I would have ended up. Maybe I would have believed in free range was a great thing if I don't know how I could have turned out in some other universe out there. All that crazy sort of scientific theory about multiple universes. Maybe there is a free-range promoting Jordan Wyatt out there somewhere. So just being a vegan there, and they do hear about veganism through me. Maybe they don't hear it at all from the materials that are provided. Maybe they see that there's a vegan option, and, oh, yeah, what's that? That's when they take all the good stuff out, all those lovely eggs and the cheese and... Oh, but they only buy the vegetarian cheese, which is funny. It doesn't have that nasty rennet in it. And I think, well, isn't breast milk just as creepy and the killing and everything and imagining the mothers and the inductions, the abortions and everything? And it's just a matter of putting into perspective that we're not there to promote free range or anything. And we make it quite clear that I disagree with them on that. And I explain why. And I have heard from more people in these groups, and they've always sort of felt this way as well. And they've just never thought other people were being more critical of it and wanting to promote only veganism. And so I do think we're having an effect, and it's just great to get out there and meet other people, and it's the only way we're going to make more vegans and to meet other vegans.
Well, I know. I probably wouldn't have a podcast. It wasn't for you, George.
Sorry, Barbara. We're getting I might leave this in. It's fun. We're getting massive distortion issues. Do you want to just unplug your microphone and plug it in again?
Okay,
I'll stop now. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
you'll hear it on the recording. Hopefully you'll listen. And it just sort of a massive echo and things. We could joke that it was, is it the National Cattlemen's Beef Association? The ones that sue people, and they heard that, oh, there's some vegan in Texas and Grand Prairie. You've got to scramble our Skype connection. Maybe they got some kind of NSA powers like that. They knew that we were bad-mouthing their industry or something. It's been great to talk to you, Barbara, especially now that I can hear you again clearly. It's been great having you on, and I always like listening to your podcast, and I read your latest blog post today. And it's great to know you, Barbara. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for calling, Jordan. Thanks for letting me be on your podcast.
You're always welcome. Thank you.
Bye.
It was lovely for Barbara to join us. You can find her at www.veganacious.com. veganacious.com, or by searching for Veganacious on iTunes for her great show promoting respect for everyone. Oh, and about that opening teas? Apparently they have non-petroleum based tea in Texas too. They don't just drink oil. Go figure. Pop culture has lied to me. Thank you for listening to this episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals. You can find the script for this episode, as well as downloads for every episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals at coexistingwithnonhumananimals.blogspot.com. To show off how fancy I am, I've been using bit.ly links for each episode, a shortcut to each episode's script and sources. Just go to www.bit.ly/coexist52 for episode 52. Episode 50 was... bit.ly/coexist50. 47 was bit.ly/coexist47, and so on. If you want to contact me, even just to say you've listened, send an email to jwontdart@gmail.com or on Twitter, twitter.com/JAYWONTDART. I'd appreciate it. Thank you for listening.
Away from the notion of animals as things and toward the moral personhood of animals. The choice is ours. If you're not vegan, go vegan. It's easy. It's better for you. It's certainly better for the planet. And most importantly, it's the morally right thing to do.